Lifestyle matters. It's more than money.
I'm Faisal Carmelli and my co-host here, Dave Popowich, both of us wearing sweaters, and it's not that cold outside.
It's been beautiful, right? I'm happy to say I missed that entire cold snap with 6 days in Mexico.
I do not like you. Dave was away in Mexico with that snap that we received. He was in positive 35 degree weather. We were in minus 100 here in Calgary. So a big difference. Speaking of big differences, there's been a change. I'm going to use the terminology in our industry, a two handle in inflation rate, which means 2% something. 2.9% core inflation rate number comes out in the United States. Are we there? Can they start cutting interest rates?
Is it a Goldilocks scenario, right? That's going to be the
question. I'm getting tired of that statement.
Why?
Because people talk about Goldilocks as if it was one or the other in choices. Too hot, too cold. What did Goldilocks do at the very end?
I don't know.
She found the right fit, the right temperature. It was just right. Everybody talks about the extremes of Goldilocks' story.
Well, the
solution was that she found the right one.
The balance doesn't
too big,
sell
too
papers.
Small. No, it was perfect.
Not good headline.
Can we stop using Goldilocks?
No, I like that term.
I think this is just exactly what the Fed has been talking about. Surprise, surprise. We are now at a point that we're below 3%.
Right.
The market
and trending down.
And
right?
trending down. Right. You know, it wasn't too long ago. We were at 8%. And now we're at 2.9% and trending down.
Right.
The question that comes up now is, do they start cutting interest rates in the U.S. and what do they do in Canada? You and I were sitting down. We actually put a video together to speak to our clients about what's going to happen in Canada. And outside of that video, you and I were talking about what's happened in the States.
Yeah.
Here's my take, and I want your thoughts on this one. Okay. With the interest rates where they are in the United States, I do not feel with the current data that the Federal Reserve is going to cut interest rates in March. Maybe, and just maybe May, I don't think so, but maybe May, given with the current data. I think the issue now is how hard is it going to get from 2.9 to 2 point something lower, 2.5, closer to 2. If they go too early and cut and this inflation comes back up, is a bigger risk to credibility than coming late to the game on it after. They can wait and wait as long as they got a two handle.
Right.
So this is where I think that the U.S. Federal Reserve is at. When you look at the Bank of Canada, it's completely different in my books. The per capita spending or spending per person is actually lower than it was in 2019. And so if we're spending that much less in this country, in Canada, I think we're going to get really aggressive in the second half for interest rates.
Because you think the economy is actually it's slowing faster than what the data right now shows.
The trajectory of the numbers will show itself faster in Canada on the downside than in the United States, which would then make the Bank of Canada cut faster. Now, a lot of the pundits or peers in our industry are suggesting that Canada will wait for the U.S. to cut first, then they will cut. I don't know about that one.
So all really good points. Maybe the question we should be asking is, does it matter? No, of course it matters in the big picture. What I'm really getting at is, I think people sometimes forget. We always talk about the crystal ball, right? The crystal ball not being clear in, you know, our world. And when we say that, it's a euphemism it's an easy way to say to people that it's very difficult to have GPS coordinates in our business. It's a compass, right? And I think what we have to do is we have to have a compass that says, are we moving north, south, east, or west? So question, are interest rates this year trending higher, lower, or are they staying flat? Ask yourself that big question, right?
Okay.
And I think, other than the impact on short-term volatility, and people freak out about that, Faisal, but your thoughts on this, I think if directionally we are to say that we are at peak interest rates and interest rates are going down, probably by the end of the year, it's less relevant to whether it went down in March, May, or June than it is directionally they went down and by how much, right? So I think that we need to, when we're planning and having these conversations, and people in general, need to start asking that compass question, not the GPS question.
the impact of what we've just been talking about to the average person going through retirement is as follows. I think one of the biggest impacts were, oh my God, finally, interest rates are as high as they are, 5%. Let's put that number out there.
Yep.
It's not going to be 5% for long.
Right.
It's trending down. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. This is going down in interest rates. So when you're hoarding cash in a savings account,
right,
and I'm using the word hoarding,
right,
meaning anybody who's just parking money that doesn't need that money for a time-specific reason greater than 3 years.
Right.
Okay? Let's just kind of define that. There's people who jumped into GICs. You speak to bond fund managers throughout North America, and they were saying their biggest competitor in 2023 was the short-term GIC or bond market.
Yep.
That took money away from active managed bond managers, and these individuals just parked money because that was the best case. They were wrong. The investors should not have just parked money for the 1 year.
Right.
They should have invested in the bond market,
right,
at least with our strategy, when we saw, you know, an 8% rate of return in the bond portfolio.
Yeah.
That's a nice number to have,
right,
comparisons to what cash was or what a GIC was. But GICs are going to be coming up for maturity in the next 6 months.
Right.
Quite a bit of it. There's a lot of money in what's called high interest savings account, quite a bit of it. And now we have that risk that people didn't calculate when they got in, and that's reinvestment risk. Here comes the problem. Where do you go after you've seen a nice return in the stock market, a nice return in the bond market, and you have cash that you're deploying back into something?
Right.
Where do you put this capital? And we can talk about, it's all about your plan. Think long term. We know most Canadians don't think about investing over the long term.
Correct.
They think calendar year by calendar year, yep, or at any point in time, they want to look at their statement.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, Dave, the question I have for you, you've got this money in high interest savings account or your GIC matured, having this entire economic backdrop, knowing that interest rates are trending down most likely. Where do you put your money?
Yeah, well, I think that to your point, the risk that most people face is this idea of recency risk, right? I've been beat up, shell-shocked. I mean, 2022 is a tough year on a lot of people, and they're stuck. They're frozen, right? Now, you look forward, given the forecast. If that is your forecast, you believe interest rates are trending lower. Well, the implication on cash is it's no longer going to be king, because your cash interest rate is going to follow the Bank of Canada down.
Yep.
Okay, so rates are falling there. Well, when rates fall, there's implications on other asset classes. Let's not talk about the alternatives. Let's just talk about the traditional asset classes, right? Remember in 2022, when rates were going up, bond prices were falling. Well, guess what happens? In general terms, when interest rates come down, bond prices tend to appreciate. So that's an area you might want to explore if you've got cash sitting on the sides for something other than, as you said, liability matching a short-term liability. And it has implications, of course, on the economy, right? As borrowing costs come down, disposable income goes up, all of those things. And what does that impact? Well, that impacts company profits, right? So it's important, again, from a GPS and a compass perspective, to pick your direction, okay? Perhaps don't try to be so specific that on this day something's going to happen that generally doesn't work out.
Correct.
Right? And then ask yourself the question, which asset classes on these broad terms makes sense.
You've led with the bond market. I'm going to lead with the stock market. Here's a reason why some people who've got long-term money greater than 5 years, they've put in cash or GICs that are coming up, that they can do something with it. I think the conversation about fundamental price to earnings ratio has a big risk if you just measure it on that. The market's expensive. I shouldn't be putting my money in now.
You and I argue all the time.
Oh my God. This is price to earnings ratio does not tell you where the market is heading. Ask anybody who bought Amazon as an example 10 years ago what the price to earnings was and look at that stock.
Right.
Or Apple.
Right.
Look at that stock. The reason why I mentioned those two companies is because they are super growth companies. So isn't that the idea that as interest rates fall, it becomes cheaper capital? The good quality growth companies will continue to grow at a faster clip than its competition. There's the opportunity.
You know, Faisal, the success in retirement, success in life in general, it's not really just about the money, is it? It's about the way you think, because where you think is it's the direction you're going to go.
So we're going to meet an author of a book, and there's a line in the book that I read that I think has stuck with me ever since I put that book down. Life is like, you know, you're on a hunt for an Easter egg, and I'm paraphrasing here. And you go through life and you find out that Easter egg has been in your pocket the whole time. And I think that's a very interesting analogy of what life really is. It feels like we're on this hunt for something.
Right.
We find out it's in our own pocket. It's about us. It's within us. And so I think when we deal with all the things going forward, no matter if it's political, geopolitical, economic, or any other fears, everything's external, and how you react to it has a lot to do with what's internal within you. So it's really stuck with me with this book. So I thought, let's bring this great Southerner coming out with this fantastic book. The book is called Flip Your Thinking to Ignite Your World, and we've got life coach, speaker, and author of the book, Rob Cross. Rob, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Faisal, what a great intro. I tell you, that's one of my favorite, too, the Easter egg analogy. We've all been on a hunt for happiness, right? That's really what we want. Some of us think it's money, but it's happiness, right?
Rob, let's go to that particular point and the sort of the idea behind the book. Give us a little background about why you wrote this book, why it was, first of all, a passion of yours, and then we'll get into some of the thought processes.
I wrote it because life was not working according to my plans. I know you guys have probably never heard of that in Canada. But can you imagine? People weren't doing what I thought they should do, right? My marriage wasn't going according to my plans. My businesses weren't going according to my plans. And it just hit me one day, and it hit me hard because I was really having a tough time struggling with why I couldn't make things work the way I wanted them. And I got it. I got it. It really hit me that it truly is my thinking. It's what I've made things mean. I mean, this book takes you to better business, better money, better life, better marriage, better joy. It makes you a better lover, believe it or not, because it covers things. Well, it takes you back to common sense. And that was my passion. I was discovering about my thinking and everything that happens to you guys today and to me today, we're going to process it and we're going to think about it and we're going to make it mean what it means. What I make it mean is how I'm going to engage with it. How I'm going to engage is going to give me the results I'm going to get in my life today, next week, next month, next year. It all starts with my thinking. And I'm so passionate about this because I love helping folks find what they're looking for. And I know what we're all looking for. And it's back to common sense. it's a journey back to yourself is what this book does. And Faisal, you've seen enough of the book. You see that it's the easiest read you're going to ever read. It's very simple, it's very engaging, and it's very entertaining.
It is a very simple book. You're like you said, very easy to get through. 36 negative ideas come out of this book, offering practical alternatives that you have for each one of them. Give us a few examples, just to kind of wet our palate here before these people go rushing to pick up this copy of a book.
Well, imperfection is sexy. Pain, that's gain. We avoid pain like a cat avoids a bathtub full of water. Who wants pain? We don't want pain. But how many times have you grown where you didn't have grow out of some sort of tragedy or mishap or challenge? We need pain just to advance. What is life other than advance? Your enemies, they're your teachers. Hey, if you want to be heard, talk less. Your weakness, that's your strength. Forgiveness, that's a big one. I tell you, forgiveness, how many of us are carrying a grudge, right? And it's like a cinder block around our ankle. I'm not going to forgive that guy because he didn't deserve it, right? I mean, he should have never done what he did. Well, that grudge that I'm holding, when I forgive him, it sets me free, not him. It's flipping your thinking on everything, virtually everything we're doing it upside down, guys. And it's just so exciting to see that because when you flip it, then you suddenly have power. For instance, blame. Why aren't you where you want to be in life? Why don't you have as much money as you wanted to have? Why aren't you doing that business that you always wanted to do? Well, it's my lack of education. Well, it's my parents. It's my upbringing. It's my whatever it is that you're pinning it on is your blame. and what you're blaming and who you're blaming, you may as well give them a remote control to your life. And they've got their thumb on the pause button because you're giving away your power.
Let's throw this at you. Let's have a mini coaching session right here. You're a coach as well. People are transitioning to and living in retirement. Let's talk about the people who are in retirement. They're focusing on a couple of things. One, of course, their lifestyle. Number two, their investment portfolio. Now, we have seen a lot of volatility over the last few years in the markets. People get impacted by that. When you're starting to see your portfolio go down and you have this negative reaction, the my retirement's not going to be envisioned the way I wanted to because of this external force called the stock market, how do you flip it in that case? Coach me away.
I tell you what, no matter what's happening, whether it's money or marriage, doesn't matter. It's not about what happens to you. It's all about what happens in you. And how you process what's going on. And I know you're thinking, well, it's more than thinking. Rob, come on. Your thoughts aren't that. Yes, they are. They're that powerful. Your thoughts are that powerful. You know how it is when you've received a negative bank balance note and suddenly you feel the stress. You feel you didn't have that 10 minutes ago before you got the note, right? it was a negative balance, but you were feeling fine. Suddenly your resources are drained. You're feeling the upset. And the upset, once again, I'm upset only because life is not going according to my plans. So here's my suggestion to you. First of all, we've got to really take control of our thoughts, or our thoughts are going to control us. And that's what's most everybody coming to me. That's what's going on. They're being controlled by their thoughts. They're like a ship without a rudder, without a keel. They're being tossed back and forth with a stock market, with a portfolio, bad news, good news. Guys, you've got to maintain your keel. You've got to recognize you can't control it. You can't control it. You can control this. And when you control this, you'll control that. You'll have a much better power of controlling. If you don't go within, you'll go without. That's basically it.
I think that's a really interesting point. And Rob, we've just got sort of a minute or so left here. Let's take that coaching one level deeper if you can. How do you gain control? So if there is a particular thought that's leading you astray, what are some of the exercises, some of the things a person can do? Because I agree with 100% with what you're saying, to get that under control and change the result.
Good question. Thank you. And it really isn't an exercise. It's really just paying attention. Listen, the one thing we don't think about is what we think about. Would you agree? We just really don't think much about that. We think about our portfolio, but we don't think about what we think about. And that's everything. That's the cornerstone that everything we launch, everything in our life. So my strong suggestion to you is, look, just be smart. We've got a brain. God gave us a brain. He gave us this amazing ability to think. So think about our thoughts. And the more you recognize how your negative thinking, which there's 70% of our thinking is negative, when you recognize, oh my gosh, I'm trying to lose weight, but I'm telling myself, it's going to be hard. Well, boom, there you go. Or it's in my DNA, or the economy won't let me do this. Boom. That stinking thinking is going to set your course to where you don't want to go. I want you to go where you want to go, and you've got to start with your thinking. So really, it's not an exercise as much as just stopping, being still, getting rid of the chatter, and recognizing, wow, okay, yeah, that's a thought that I just had that I never realized I have. We don't even realize the thoughts we're having, guys. Until we stop and we recognize them and what they're doing to us. It's like a train on a track. No matter how big it is, it's going to stay on the track. No matter how grandiose your plans are for retirement, you're not going to go any further than where your thinking is going to allow you. And you've got to recognize that.
Yeah. And that's a key thing, Rob. We're running out of time. Head to Amazon, everyone. Go pick up the book, Flip Your Thinking to Ignite Your World by Rob Cross. Cross, if you're looking for the proper spelling of that, on Amazon.ca, available now. Pick it up. And thank you, Rob, for joining us today.
God bless your listeners. And remember, everything, you're more capable than you think you are. God bless you guys.
Having kids, you think once you maybe get them out of the house, maybe the cost of having children, you've done your bit, right? You're moving on. Well, that may not be the case, Faisal.
That may not be the case. And let me give a bit of background on the guests that we're having here. When you start building information and you're a finance columnist, on a company like the Globe and Mail, mm-hmm. you just don't do it willy nilly. The amount of background research surveys that go on with this gentleman, not only on this topic, but other topics, I've seen it all across the place. He's actually getting that information himself. Mm-hmm. He's building up on this and he's actually putting this together. So this is not like he's just anecdotal information.
Right.
When we talk about dealing with parents, children, adult children, you know, I call them the boomerang. They leave, they come back, all these different things that come up. We've got Rob Carrick, personal finance columnist from the Globe and Mail on the show today. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Glad to do it.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. You did survey a whole bunch of parents here, or parents were surveyed.
1,000 people. Let's just say a whole bunch. 1,000 yeah. parents yep. here.
And a lot of those parents were, not surprisingly, Rob, helping their adult children, and in particular around housing and housing related costs. So let's talk a little bit from a high level summary. What did you discover, first of all, and were there any surprises?
So what I discovered was that 40% of the people, and it's about 1,100 people in the survey, 40% said that they were supporting in some way financially their kids who had already bought a house. We're not talking about the parents who gave their kids money for down payments. That's old news. Happened a lot, billions of dollars, but the kids got the house, now what? Well, like I say, 4 in 10 of this 1,100 person group said they are helping. And about 25% said they're giving their kids money to help with the mortgage renewal, buy down the balance so that the mortgage is lower. Others are helping with home renovations. They're helping with the property taxes. They're helping with improvements to the home. Basically, they're like a backstop. Like they see their kids struggling, and they're coming up with cash. It's like, okay, we did the down payment. Now we see more help is needed. And I find this really interesting because I think it's well understood that a lot of parents want to, and where they can, they will help their kids with down payments. But what are you getting your kid into when they own a home? Well, it's a big spend fest, and they're having to re-up.
Why do you think parents are doing this? Like, what's the reason? And then I'll go back to when I was a first-time home buyer and I had to have some costs. I would never ask my parents, maybe because I was just in fear of asking that I need help.
Yep.
The second part of it is I've always have my father's voice in the back of my headset saying, if you're going to get into this, it's on you. Figure it out yourself. That's kind of changed,
yep.
At least in my life. Why do you think parents are actually helping just maintain the home, keep things going, help with the renewal, stuff like that?
You know, part of it is different parenting, I think. Like, parents are just more involved in everything their kids do. And obviously, this involvement does not end when they leave the house, as you mentioned earlier. But I think another aspect is that parents kind of teamed up with their kids to get into the housing market. And it's like, let's do this together. It worked out so well for us. We've got to get you in there. And I think there may be some sense of responsibility. We got them in. Now we have to help them stay in. And that's part of it, too.
Rob, there was an interesting piece of the research, and just reading from the article, it says 1/3 said that they were making compromises, them being the parents. They were making compromises to afford the financial help. 7.5% said they were going into debt. So maybe that speaks to what you've just said. Maybe it's broader, but if you can speak to that particular point and that impact that it's having on parents.
Well, you know, you have to wonder how much elasticity is there in the retirement finances of Canadian adults in their 50s and 60s and 70s, et cetera. And it's not infinite. And so we're seeing some parents having to compromise. I mean, I have heard, someone I spoke to at a personal finance event I was speaking at told me that they're working longer so that they can make the money to help their kids get into the housing market. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about there. I think people are, maybe they're foregoing things. Maybe they're doing one trip a year or no trips a year. Going into debt, I'm guessing it's home equity lines of credit being used here. I think that number probably understates how often HELOCs are being used by parents to help kids. I think that there's this parental feeling like my kids must own a home and it must go well for them. And I mean, like, I think previous generations and, you know, we struggled with our housing costs and we delayed upkeep and we sacrificed things at certain points. And now there's a sense that I don't want my kids to have to do that. And, you know, it's money that can be deployed in any number of ways, and it's being deployed to help kids get into the housing market and then afterwards as well. You know, I'm wondering how long until we start hearing about parents helping their kids retire. You know, my kid wasn't able to save in an RRSP or a TFSA to any meaningful extent. I'm going to give them X amount to put towards retirement. I mean, you know, if your parent's 95 and you see your 60-year-old kid is not doing well, or your 50-year-old kid is not doing well on the retirement front, you know what retirement costs. That, to me, is going to be the next frontier of parental help to their kids.
I think you've hit on something there, because I can anecdotally with our clients can tell you our clients who are in their early 50s are already setting up and paying for tax-free savings accounts for their children, RSP contributions for their children. So anecdotally, it's happening, at least in our practice. I see that right now. What I find interesting or would like to know more about, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, is what's the mindset? Can you imagine, Dave, now you've got two daughters, and let's fast forward into 30, 35 years of age, and they don't own a home. Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel?
I feel okay.
Okay. I don't know if everybody agrees with the way you feel. I think they might feel like they're not accomplishing raising their child in a certain way because their child is renting at 35 years of age. They don't have a home. They've got a home that's kind of needs renovations. It doesn't look good. If it doesn't look good on them, meaning the child, it doesn't look good on the parent. And that's possibly why they're feeding some of the money. Rob, what are your thoughts about my thesis on this one?
I think you are definitely onto something. There's just no question about it that it's appearances, but it's also that emotional feeling that I don't want my kids to not do as well as I did. I want them to do better than I did, and I'm gonna help them out financially to make that happen. You know, there's a lot of parents feeling each other out in discussions about what they're doing to help their kids. I've been involved in a few of them. I have two sons, one's 29, one's 26. And, you know, we talk about what are you doing to help your kids? Like, you know, not just with housing, but affording everyday life and that sort of thing where they need help. And I think, you know, so I think it's appearances, but it's also sort of that emotional feeling, you know, like if my kids need a lift and I can afford it, I'm going to do it. And I think in previous generations, a parent would have just looked, and there would have been more distance, and you would have said, oh, they're struggling now. I hope things turn around, and, you know, and I'll give you any support I can, but I'm not going to like pay your property taxes or like give you, you know, $50,000 to pay down your mortgage balance so your payments after renewal are much more affordable. I think that didn't happen a lot.
Okay, Rob, thanks very much. We're going to have to shut off. We're running out of time there. This is a topic we're not done talking about by any stretch of the imagination. And we appreciate all of the insights and the work that you do. So thank you for keep up the good work. Thank you for joining us today.
Great chat, guys. I'm glad to do it.
Been joined by Rob Carrick, personal finance columnist at the Globe and Mail. You know, I think when you asked me about that particular point, Faisal, what came to mind is I think my responsibility as a parent is to educate them about how to be good adults, right? And guess what? Being a good adult is understanding total cost of ownership of something like a house. If you're going to get into this, my job would be, okay, let's sit down and I'm going to go through and map out all of the different things you're going to have to be prepared for so they know going in, right? And they don't bite off more than they can chew. I tell you, when I started buying, I remember my first condominium was $52,000. I'm freaking out like, oh my God, because I knew it wasn't $52,000. I had to buy furniture and I had all these ongoing costs and maintenance and so on and so forth, right? Because my dad sat me down and said, okay, son, here's what this looks like.
So you had the finance conversation in advance of the purchase.
Right.
I don't think that happens a lot.
I don't think so either. And I think that's the message that maybe people should take away from this. If you can help, help. I mean, I'm not judging anybody for what they do, but the education of your kids along those lines is the most important. Faisal, we recently hosted our first of the year seminars to a packed house. And it was really interesting because last year was a pretty good year for portfolios. Mm-hmm. And what I found particularly interesting about the conversation and with that group of people, a large group of people, had very little to do with portfolio returns per se. It had to do with everything else. It had to do with the implication of taxes or inappropriate investments because of American citizenship or OAS clawbacks. Or, I mean, it went on and on and on. And I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
That that the focus was on the broader idea of wealth management and all the complexities beyond just stocks and bonds.
And I think you've nailed it when you said the complexity. I think when people look at their retirement, when they're heading into retirement, or they just take a quick snapshot.
Yeah.
And let's make up some numbers so it kind of makes it hit home for a lot of people. Let's say you need $1 million. You have $1 million of investments. You need $60,000 a year to come from your investments to support your lifestyle. Just give me a 6% return. I'm done.
Right.
That's all I need. And so then you get your 6% return, let's say in 2023. Hey, we hit target. Congratulations. And then you get your tax bill come.
Hang on. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Then you get your tax bill come April.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, how come no one told me about my tax situation?
Right.
And then how come I have no idea how to plan for this? Or how come my old age security is being clawed back? Or how come I'm a U.S. citizen and I have a TFSA, or I have investments that are considered no-no
right.
for the U.S. government?
Canadian Trust, yeah.
Right? All these different issues start coming up.
Right.
How come no one's planning the big picture? Because the only thing that you've been planning on is that rate of return.
Right. And it speaks to, you know, it was a fun conversation to have because you and I have been preaching for 15 years, right? Why do you think we call this More Than Money, the show More Than Money?
Yeah.
It's because retirement and the complexity of that time of life speaks to more than just, you know, having a portfolio that grows over time, which is what people want when you're 30 and 40. I get it, right? That's mm-hmm. We talk about that, but they're no longer 30 and 40, right? You're moving into retirement. You need income. Nobody lives on pre-tax. You live on after-tax. These things all have a massive impact on the success and the outcome of the portfolio.
Very few people talk to us for a second opinion or just a quick look at their portfolio or just like a litmus test to see if they're okay and say, I've covered all these topics. I've covered income, mm-hmm. tax efficient, sustainable, predictable income. I've covered growth in my assets so that I can offset long-term inflation and meet unexpected extraordinary expenses.
Add risk to that. Don't move on until you add risk.
And in a risk-adjusted basis. Yes,
thank you.
I've handled my healthcare costs in the future that I have no idea what the heck it's going to be,
right. But
I've had some sort of plan around it. And when I'm done, my assets will be transferred over to the people I care about or charities I want to support. And I've done that in the most tax efficient way and to the wishes that I want to give. Yeah. Very few people have all those four areas. We call them the buckets covered. So when they sit down in front of us and they go, hey, look at my portfolio. It's done 6-7% or whatever the number is for their target.
Yeah.
But I have all these other problems. How come no one's talking to me about their problem? And the answer to that question is because you weren't dealing with a specialist.
Right. Dealing with an investment manager at best, right?
If you're going to go to the pharmacy, you're going to get a lot of over-the-counter medication. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know what the prescription is, you're in trouble. You're going to pick a secondary product. You're going to pick a Tylenol, an aspirin, an Advil, and that may not be the solution to the bigger problem.
But add into that analogy that you may be on more than one medication. Those medications may compete against each other.
Oh, how many stories like that have
we heard? Yeah, exactly. And it's the same thing, right? We talk about the goals change in retirement. Why does it get more complex? Simply gets more complex because you have multiple goals you're trying to achieve. It's no longer the singular goal of growth. And often those goals will compete against each other. And if you aren't thinking about the big picture and those interactions between those drugs, then you can have a problem.
And so this is the point in time why we call it the most vulnerable stage of a person's financial life. This is the point in time where you've got a whole bunch of goals that are sometimes competing with each other. And when you have that situation and you don't have, I'll use the word, chief financial officer of the family, then you are going to experience the side effect of the one type of medication that you've been taking to help you get through retirement.
That's right.
When it comes to your investment portfolio. And the side effect of just having a good portfolio is it may not be tax efficient. You may have issues about healthcare that you haven't accounted for. You might be taking on too much risk to get that rate of return.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. There's a whole bunch of side effects to the recommendation of just having a good performance in the portfolio. So here's my prediction for 2024. A lot of our peers in the industry are going to announce their 10-year returns. And I'm already seeing this flood my inbox when it comes to mutual fund companies and likes like that. Here's our 10-year performance. Look at the numbers. And to their credit, they've done well. And to their credit or to their defense, they're not required to show more than just rates of return over certain periods of time,
mm-hmm.
year to date, 1, 3, 5, 10-year numbers. That's all they're required to do. What will be nice to see is how much risk do you have to be willing to accept in order to get that rate of return?
Right.
And I think that's going to be the biggest problem in 2024 is bragging mm-hmm. rights on performance without disclosure of volatility. Now, when I say disclosure, sure, they're going to have the small print at the bottom. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. You know, consult with your own financial advisor, volatility and risk and loss. They're going to have those disclaimers, but they're not going to tell you what the risk was over the time, the highs, the lows. There's one thing we put in our presentation for those people who attended at that seminar. And I think we should continue doing this. We put up on a screen a portfolio A versus B. And we say rate of return of portfolio A is 1 to 2% better. Let's say 11% versus 10%. I'm making up these numbers. And we asked people to write down what they pick. And they all generally picked the higher rate of return.
Of course.
No one said, whoa, what's the risk?
Right. No one yet has ever asked us that.
No one put up their hand and said, wait, before I answer this question that you're asking me, what's the risk that I'm going to be taking to get that rate of return?
Right.
Because they're all focused on rate of return. But what if you have to take on 25% volatility just to get that 11% rate of return?
Right.
So if you had $1 million, you have to accept a drop of $250,000. How does
that
feel?
At some point, yeah.
How does that feel?
Right.
Can you handle that?
Now, what you've talked about, again, is the performance of the portfolio. But let's go back to the analogy you used for pharmaceuticals. You'd seen one of those ads where they say, hey, this may lead to, you know, all these bad side effects. You might grow a third eye in the back of your head if you're allergic to this.
Risk is one side effect.
Right. But forget about just portfolio because that's risk
bigger than that. Carry
then
on.
Expand beyond that to your 100%. Family, right? This portfolio, they don't say, this portfolio may lead to an OAS clawback. They don't say that.
Or higher taxes.
Or higher taxes.
Or inefficiency in regards to withdrawal in the event of a healthcare issue.
Exactly. Like,
it's not just about the portfolio, hence why we call the show More Than Money.
Right.
It's more than just the investment side. So I think we can learn from this. Mark my words for my prediction for 2024. Watch how risk will not be the conversation.
Yep.
It'll just be return. And in the results, whatever you're investing in, there's side effects. Know your side effects.
Know your side effects.
And those side effects will not only be a financial part of it, it can be other parts of your life that can have the side effect for having the prescription of that good rate of return of a portfolio.
Right on.
Let's talk about that further at our upcoming seminar on Tuesday, March 5th. 7 p.m. at the Carriage House Inn. Now, you need to reserve your seats because we are filling up fast on this one. So reserve your seats for March 5th, 7 p.m. at the Carriage House Inn. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com. That's morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Okay, I want to thank you on behalf of Faisal and myself, Dave, for joining us for this segment. Any of our past segments can be found on morethanmoneyradio.com. Go there to check them all out or to re-listen to this one. We look forward to chatting with you next week. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.
David Popowich and Faisal Karmally are portfolio managers and investment advisors with CIBC Woodgundy in Calgary. The views of David Popowich and Faisal Karmally do not necessarily reflect those of CIBC World Markets Inc. Clients are advised to seek advice regarding their particular circumstances from their personal tax and legal advisors. If you are currently a CIBC Woodgundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Woodgundy is a division of CIBC World Markets Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.